Welcome back to the Pod of Greed.
Welcome back indeed, guys. So, you know what this episode number is? This is episode 99.
Oh, snap.
Episode 99 of the one
and only
podcast on the internet. Hopefully you guys are having a good Thursday morning. We certainly are.
It's Wednesday for us.
Yeah, we gotta like tell them it's Thursday morning. They can feel like it's Thursday morning.
We're all in this together.
Yeah, we're recording this on Wednesday evening, as usual. It's when we normally record it. Yeah, this one's gonna be fun. There were a few stories from the past week that, like, week before last that we weren't able to cover, like the Digimon thing. So we're gonna be able to get into a lot of that. A lot of Yu-Gi-Oh things have happened. Before all that,
put your ones up.
Yes, ones in chat. If you're watching slash premiere listening, gang, rise up to the YouTube premiere.
I got you're listening to the premiere. Twist it up.
Ever thought about how hard it is to like just say like YugiTube? Like it's kind of convenient because like Yugi sounds like you. So like you know we have YugiTube as opposed to like PokeTube or whatever tube. But like we have YugiTube, but it also just gets my tongue tied a lot.
Is this your Yu-Gi-Oh YouTube videos?
Yeah. Your Yu-Gi-Oh! YouTube, you...
I couldn't come up with
it. Yeah, I didn't... Anyway, yeah, it's going to be a fun one. Ones in chat if you're in the premiere. Make sure that you thumbs up the video as well. Seriously, that actually does help. It shares the premiere with more people. More people can watch. It can be a whole fun time. We'll try to have something kind of fun and exciting planned for next week because that'll be the 100th episode
of 100.
This is crazy. It's 100 episodes of this podcast. But
and like, so that does that mean we can finally take a week off?
I don't think so. No, we gotta keep it pushing. I don't think we've missed a week, and that's crazy because I miss
a lot of things.
I miss a lot of other things. So anyway, I guess we can just kick it off with the Yu-Gi-Oh news of the week.
Let's do it.
There's a few things. So where to start? Do you figure?
I mean, I always want to start with cards.
Yeah, I got to start with a few cards. Cool.
There's
so,
more than just cards this week, guys.
Yeah, there is more than just cards. There have been some OCG reveals I've seen. That's kind of been the highlight. A few more cards from like Duelist Advance. Some product announcements.
The new Tactical Try series.
Yeah, let's start with Tactical Try. Because this is kind of exciting, actually. It looks like these are new cards.
And because if you guys remember the Tactical Try series, there's been two of them in Japan so far. And it's usually just reprints of what seem to be Master Duel crafted decks.
Right, yeah.
Now, this time we do not have the full list of the decks, but we do know what the archetypes are, and seemingly each one's going to have a brand new card.
Yeah, so there's the Dark Magician Tactical Tri deck, which has this new monster called Magician of Black Demise. And
that boy looks
if you look
sick.
At this artwork, dude, this is insane.
He looks metal.
So I was confused about this at first because I thought that this was like a retrain of Master of Chaos or whatever, or like one of those Dark Magician ritual forms, whichever one it's like summoned with Chaos form. I thought it was like just a, like an alt art of it because up to now, Tactical Tri decks have been, just for some background for people who don't know, they're these decks that have been releasing in like the OCG territories. They are, like you said, designed kind of to be built on Master Duel as sort of a bridge product. They have hand traps in them. They have like staples like your Forbidden Droplet, Lightning Storm, that sort of thing.
You don't have to buy more than one. All the cards you need are, well, right there.
Yeah, they've got multiples. They've got deck cores. It's a whole time.
We've actually played with them on our main channel.
Yeah, we have done duels with them. Very good products. Cool. Wish we could get them in the TCG. Come on, Kanai. What are you waiting for? But anyway, up to now, they have seemingly just been like, okay, they just use existing cards.
Just reprints.
Now, Eldritch, Cyber Dragon, and Evil Twin, that was the first line of them, did go on to get new cards that are like releasing an Alliance Insight.
New cards and alt arts.
Yeah, and alt arts that like sort of power up those existing themes. So I'm guessing that with this Dark Magician one, which by the way, it's Dark Magician, Masked Hero, and Mikanko.
Yep.
I'm guessing that maybe they're just skipping the step of the new support card and just like it's just going to be in the Tactical Tri deck, like the new
which,
cards.
It makes some sense. The, you know, the first line of Tactical Tri decks, those deck lists were already so accepted and solid. They didn't need any new flavor to them to make them work. But when it comes to Mass Hero, Dark Magician, and Mikanko, I mean, Mikanko's pretty solid, but Dark Magician and Mass Hero don't scream extremely solid deck to me.
Yeah, for sure. And so I think that they would have needed some new cards. One interesting thing is that this Dark Magician card, obviously it looks cool. It seems like it's sort of an original creation. Like it's an original new Dark Magician form.
Well, it looks like an upgrade of Dark Magician of Black Chaos, the ritual monster.
Yeah, that's true. But like, I guess original in the sense that like, what I'm going to say next is this Masked Hero monster apparently comes from a manga panel.
Yeah, I remember people were pulling it up, but that Masked Hero was actually one that was summoned straight to the field from the main deck in the manga. It's not an extra deck monster.
Yeah, this is from the Yu-Gi-Oh! GX manga. It's Masked Hero Dusk Crow. And it's kind of cool. He literally looks like he's sort of landing like a hero would, you know, like landing on the scene. Superhero
landing, busting one of those knees wide open.
Yeah, so that's really cool. No idea what these effects are. And then also there's Mekanko of Uzuhime, which... I know, is there, like, I don't know what the blue Mekanko is called. I forget her name, but I know the red. I never remember the
Mekanko names. I just know that they set me up to get OTK'd.
Yeah, so these are three really exciting new products. I think that they will be very popular in the territory that they do get released in, because we don't get to have them.
I mean, while we won't get the Tactical Tridex, at some point the new cards will find their way out west.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that's the most... that's the most exciting thing for us because, you know, we're living in the Blue Eyes Renaissance period, right? Like, everybody and their mama is playing that Blue Eyes deck. They're having a great time.
Right. Yeah, and I think that that's it's a good call to do something for Dark Magician, at least. Like, this should be exciting and fun. I have a hunch that mine might be, like, ritual-based, since that kind of seems to be, with Magician of Black Chaos, that's how it typically goes.
Mostly because, well, I mean, he doesn't do anything. He is just a ritual monster.
Yeah, so... And, you know, ritual is kind of a tough mechanic to get it to work well, but still, it would be cool because it would kind of, like, for the tactical tries, I guess that would be, like, the first ritual strategy that they would have, and so.
I mean, they're definitely doing something different with this tactical try series because, I mean, a ritual-based Dark Magician deck, no one had that on their bingo card, right?
Yeah.
But I guarantee nobody was expecting new Masked Hero because, like, this is a Masked Hero strategy they're promoting here. It's not just heroes, but with Dark Law.
Yeah, so those should be cool. I mean, I know that the tactical tries are popular in Japan, so these should continue to be. Also, just as a little update, the Rescue Ace and Exo Sister ones are going to be releasing in May in the OCG, so we'll try to maybe get some copies and do a little some with them.
Because, you know, it's not going to show up in the West anytime soon.
Yeah, also the OCG did get a new Forbidden and Limited list. So,
oh yeah.
It's a pretty involved one. Fair warning, I don't know anything about what the current OCG like meta really is, so I'm not going to like really give too many like strong opinions on it, but just if you guys wanted to know what it is, I'll put it up on screen.
Let's just give our knee-jerk opinions as TCG players.
Yeah, we'll give our uninformed little opinions. We're good for that on this podcast. So they did ban Artifact Lancia.
Wow.
And Summon Limit. Oh my God, so insane. I can't believe that card that I don't really know them. No. Artifact Lancia is a card that even here in the TCG, people are pretty...
It's a menace.
...unhappy with it because it is an, for many intents and purposes, auto-win card against Malice. They just can't function under Artifact Lancia. Summon Limit is another Floodgate. Getting the boot.
You know how we feel about Floodgates around here.
Yeah, people don't like them. I think that in a general sense, that's kind of cool. Konami's kind of cutting down on the Floodgates. I'll give the opinion I usually give, though, on that, which is, like, I think if you're going to be getting rid of these Floodgates, it would be nice to also, like, tame the Floods themselves a little bit in the process.
True. I mean, Floodgates only exist because Yu-Gi-Oh! Is an untamed mess of a game where anything can happen at any time.
There's also whatever the fucking Red Rhyzeal card is. I don't know all their names. It's like X Rhyzeal, Sword Rhyzeal, Ice Rhyzeal.
It's probably just a consistency hit.
It's one of the ones that can start for them. There's also Malice Dormouse. These are all cards that went to one. Dimension Shifter went to one, which now matches where it is in Master Duel. So that's kind of an interesting thing. I think 7th Tachyon is what the spell is. That went to one.
It's funny to see that go to one, and we just got it in TCG.
Yeah, we only just got it, but it's just such a massive consistency boost to Rhyzeal, so I assume that that's kind of what that had to do with. And That Grass Looks Greener also went to one. I think it was at two before.
Do you think they printed 7 Tachyon just so they could limit it as a consistency hit to Rhyzeal?
I mean, I've started to think like it can't be a coincidence. They just they time these things because it's the, kind of the same with like Bonfire and stuff. Like, I think that they hit Bonfire in the OCG like a list or two ago as like a Snake Eyes hit. But also, as it happens, Bonfire is used in Rizeal as well. So like, you just got to hit the consistency of these decks. It's just weird though because it's like, they must have known, like, Seventh Tachyon was going to be used this way. Like, we're too deep in this game to not know, like, when
it's, cards... And it's so weird, because we're making archetypal slash typal support that will definitely get put into a meta deck. And it feels like they had to have been just been pre-planning to hit these cards, which it's a shame, because there are niche strategies that... off these cards.
It leaves such a bad taste in your mouth.
It's like you got your little pyro deck together, Bonfire's hit. Like your little your
Tachyon anime accurate
Tachyon deck hits.
I mean, at least it's at one and not banned, so you can use it. But
this is like you could have had three.
They semi-limited Cyber Jar. This is already at one, so now it's just moved to two. Which is great. I think that this just goes on to show these cards don't.
Go ahead and put Cyber Jar at three. I feel like it's
It'll be at three next time, I promise. One of these Pirelli memories, I think this is like Happy Memory. I don't really know them by their artwork.
Quick play or the...
I mean, they're all quick plays. Oh, outside, right. Well, I guess there's like the Field Spell and the Continuous Spell, but like they're all just quick plays. It got put to two, which is cool. Okay, and then a bunch of cards went to three. Fire King Kieran, because I guess they've managed to like phase out Fire King Snake Eye. Perform Pal Monkey Board. So funny to see that at three.
Because nobody cares.
Yeah, because no one cares. There was a time when it was a huge deal. Chronograph Sorcerer, which apparently was like a two or something there.
Which is so strange. It's so weird. Because in the TCG, like, Astrograph was the fallen one. But I guess in the OCG, maybe they hit them both?
Yeah, they just threw Masterpiece to three. Shouldn't really matter. Morphing Jar at three. Shouldn't really matter. Snatch Steal at three, shouldn't really matter. And Zodiac Barrage.
Oh, really Snatch matter. Steal at three. I feel like we were testing Snatch Steal at one at one point. We were losing our minds.
Nah, doesn't mean shit. I think everybody who's listening to this podcast at this point knows my views on these cards. Like, I think none of them make a difference. It's just a power creep thing.
Well, wait until you play against my Gradle deck with three Snatch Steals.
Yeah, gonna go and win that. Four-person tournament.
That'll be fun. I can run it in my vampire deck. They actually really like it when you control your opponent's monsters. And my opponents will hate that. So,
yeah, see, to me, that's what those cards have been relegated to now. Like, these cards like Snatch Steal being at three is like, these are just pet deck food now. Like, your fun little pet deck.
Vampires are meta.
Yeah. They are. Anyways.
I didn't even give it.
I got another announcement. Card Game The Chronicles. That is the... anime series, which
weird name.
Can we get like a better name for that?
Like that just I assuming like there's like a thing, so. it's like a language translation situation, but I feel like we can do better, a little bit better than that.
Yeah, so they've sort of announced the general release windows of the Sky Striker anime, which is going to be releasing in April and May 2025, mm-hmm. and then the White Story, or Ecclesia Albaz.
Branded.
Yeah, the branded story, which is going to start airing in June 2025.
They don't have, like, an ending window for that one, so I'm assuming it's not done yet, so they don't know how long it'll be.
My guess, just from what we know of these stories in-game, is that I can totally see Sky Striker releasing... Okay, actually, there's a bunch of questions I have. How long are the episodes going to be? How often do they come out? Like, is it going to be a weekly thing? I don't remember if they ever said that. But,
so, like, it feels like they're not... my guess is that Konami Animation is not ready for a full-fledged anime yet. So I'm assuming, like, shorter episodes.
Yeah, I'm thinking, like, maybe you get a 5 minutes a week. Actually, probably, like, 3 minutes a week. I wouldn't surprise me.
I
mean,
I saw one take online. Someone said 10 minutes once a month. Which
maybe actually,
I mean I that, do kind of assume like this is a baby steps kind of process.
Yeah, that actually sounds doable too.
I actually wouldn't even be mad about it just because, you know, Konami Animation has to take steps. They can't just jump to making full anime. Up until now they've only done shorts and openings for anime series. So
they did show a little 20-second preview of the Sky Striker one. We were watching that a little earlier. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of, I guess, like to get you a taste of what you'll be seeing.
You see, in the full thing. That was Rey's transformation sequence, right?
Yeah, she's kind of getting suited up, getting ready for battle.
Suited and booted.
Yeah, Rey's awesome.
It looked good. I'll say that. It looked good.
Yeah, their animations are always very, They've always been impressive from what I've seen. So
I want to see Albash transform into like his different dragon forms.
So yeah, that's going to be happening. I hope that maybe they dub them, but I think that's probably me asking a little too much.
Nah, and then I think with the state of like dubbing with the whole SAG after strike thing,
it's probably not happening.
It's a rough time.
All right. Also, Master Duel got a new ban list as well. So the Duelist Cup actually was happening this past weekend, at least the second phase of it. As you guys probably know, the Duelist Cup is a controversial event in Master Duel.
Paul said this time that he was going to play the whole way through and just have a bag so he could defecate in, but then he didn't do it.
And I did not. I streamed for like 2 days of it. It was kind of fun.
But you didn't stream for 2 days straight. You just stream. Yeah, that's true. I tuned two
separate, like a little few hour long streams. Yeah, the Duelist Cup happened. People right now are really kind of fed up with the Fire King, Snake Eyes, Azumina, plus other engines deck. It's obnoxious. It's obscene. The turns take a long time. What's new? But it's either you're playing that or you're playing Tenpai, because surprise, that's still around, even post its past hits. And then there's stun decks. And yay. So if you're like, yeah. So if you're like playing in the Duelist Cup, like these were the three things that you were dealing with the most, and they're very wearing.
I mean, I think the most wearing part is just how long the experience takes.
Yeah.
Your opponent's going to use up damn near 100% of their clock on their turn.
Funny thing about that, actually, this is the first time where I have just consistently, in Master Duel, I've consistently seen people just run out of time when they're playing that deck. Like, I didn't realize the Fiendsmith, this is a little me bitching maybe about card design or something. Surprise, surprise. The Fiendsmith engine is so tedious. Like, it is such a tedious engine because the way that it works is, like, cards are just getting, like, sent from hand and deck and stuff to the grave, and then, like, he's shuffling these light fiends back into the extra deck and then like making something again and shuffling things back into the extra deck. And it's like, and it all really just amounts to a couple of warm bodies and like a Fiendsmith Desiree at the end of it. But the amount of time that it takes just to get through all the steps, it's so repetitive.
Maybe Konami should add a macro to Master Duel where it's just, it's like, click this button to do your Fiendsmith combo. Click this button to do your Azumina combo. Just like,
because the thing is, you have to do the Fiendsmith thing, and that's in addition to like the White Forest combo, which God knows that takes forever too. Like, they just,
as someone who has been playing White Forest in real life lately, it can take a while.
Yeah, they search the spells, they pitch the spells have to reset themselves, and they send them again. And it's like, and you add in just that and whatever other engines, like there's the Millennium engine people usually run, you know, they place and they search and they place and they search and they place and they search. And it's like, yeah, so I've had people, like there was one day when I was streaming the Duelist Cup, and people can like go back and watch this VOD. The person's first turn took 9 minutes of like real life time. I know they say that there's like a 300 second timer, but it took 9 minutes of real life time. And then it just gave me a time limit win. And I was just like, okay, like I guess this is just where we are. So, you know, I know people like to exaggerate the whole, like, Yu-Gi-Oh's got 10-minute turns, but, like, we're actually getting there, and I think that deck, yeah. Anyway, okay, so here's what the ban list is. It's kind of a small one, surprisingly. Like, typically the ones after Duelist Cups tend to be a little bit larger, but they banned Beatrice.
Beatrice could not stay off ban list.
Yeah, this is one that needed to go. She's oftentimes one of the cards that, like, bridges your Fiendsmith materials into your next engine. Oftentimes, like sending something for Snake Eyes.
Why is Beatrice so unacceptable?
Like, what do you mean?
So, ever since Beatrice first came out in Yu-Gi-Oh! As a whole, Beatrice has been married to the ban list. She hops on it, she hops off of it, she hops back on it. And, like, she's been banned, right?
Yeah, this is a ban.
What year did she come out? Was that 2016?
Like 16-ish, maybe?
You're telling me that all the way in 2024, this card from 2016 is getting banned.
It's funny because she is, her problem is one of the Yu-Gi-Oh! I'm starting to realize, like, as time passes, Yu-Gi-Oh! Has these sort of, like, unspoken rules of, like, this makes a card just not acceptable. And there's, like, two very defined ones, which is, anything that can send cards indiscriminately from deck to grave just kind of can't be allowed. Lavaval Chain got banned for it.
He stayed there.
He'll never be coming back. And like Beatrice is kind of the same story. And it's not just like a foolish burial type thing. It's these cards that can send anything to your grave. Because like, in addition to the fact that like they can send a monster and start an engine, they can also send like spells and traps that can be abused with like transaction rollback or set again with Nightmare Griffin. Like,
you better play Foolish Burial of Goods like everybody else.
Because remember, like those aren't even the only two culprits. There's also Curious.
Yeah.
In Lightsworn Dominion, same situation. And because the extra deck is a resource that you can like oftentimes access at will almost, you know, these cards just they find their way in the ban list.
Is it, I know that this is not within Konami's purview, but would it kill them just to go ahead and slap in a rat on these cards where it just hard locks the send? Beatrice can only send fiends. Oh, better yet, Beatrice can only send Burning Abyss fiend monsters.
Never. Never. So the next one is Sengen Kaimon went to 1 instead of 2. There's a second hit to Tenpai. It's probably needed. I mean, like, Tenpai, it's an annoying-ass low TK deck.
I mean, are they dead now? Will this kill it?
Doubt it. I mean, it'll be hope. I think that their plan is that it's that typical Master Duel thing. This will make it so frail that it will be unattractive to people.
I mean, that is typically enough. If people feel like they cannot consistently get their OTKs off, they're just going to stop.
A weird one that people didn't really expect is Block Dragon went from banned to 1. So that's kind of strange because...
I hate that card.
Yeah, that's a pretty abusable card in like the Adamancipator deck, and it's also known for long combos and long turns. We'll see where this one goes. You know, it could be trouble, or maybe it's just kind of fallen in line at this point. I don't really know. I fear the deck that like uses a Block Dragon combo plus a Fiendsmith combo plus 1, you know. And then Pearly Lee, or whatever you say that. It went from 2 to 3, the Black Cat. This is just like one of those nice little quality of life adjustments for Pearly, because they long since fallen out of the Master Duel meta. So.
And I think, you know, Goblin Bikers need this buff, honestly.
Right, yeah. A second thing in Master Duel 2 is that we are getting a secret pack, basically tonight, tomorrow night, however you want to word that, that gives us Dominus Impulse and Dominus Purge.
Oh, wow, a Dominus pack.
Yeah, both Dominus cards coming out in the same pack, as well as the Red Eyes Black Full Metal Dragon and the whole...
Oh, we're getting the Metalmorph
stuff. Yeah, the Metalmorph strategy.
That's a fun pack.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of fun. The Goblin Bikers also get the last bit of their support. Goblin Bikers Gone Wild. Yeah. And the Performage cards that came in Maze of the Master that we opened kind of recently.
Yep, I picked them up and then I forgot to build them.
Yeah, those are also going to be... game release as well. So this is a pretty cool one. You know, if you're an anime head, you get to play your Red Eyes, like Flame Swordsman kind of Metalmorph thing. And perhaps more importantly for most players, 2 new hand traps to get added into the mix. Whether that's a good or a bad thing kind of depends on who you ask. I mean,
Yu-Gi-Oh! Could always use more hand traps, man. At some point, I just want to be around 40 hand traps.
We are rapidly approaching that day. So that's kind of the Master Duel stuff. It's cool, you know. Fun, I suppose. I think this. I'll take this opportunity to say I do think that Master Duel is running into this problem that I guess anybody probably could have seen coming from a mile away. Is just that it's a bit of a. It's just it's intense. Like it's starting to kind of more closely mirror that modern TCG thing where you have to run so many hand traps and the kind of the. The decks and the combos, they take a long time. Like, it's... I think what people probably need most in Master Duel is...
A break.
Yeah, their own probably personal break. But modes that give you that, too. Like, just... Because being able to go somewhere beyond just the ladder...
Right.
Where you're going to just face this stuff, like, ad nauseum. I hope that the dev team is maybe considering something for that.
They should add speed duels.
Anything.
Let it continue on in Master Duel.
Yeah, I mean, I think at this point, like, add anything. We're kind of starved for it. Last bit of Yu-Gi-Oh! News from me. There's these announcements. Have you seen these Yu-Gi-Oh! Keycaps? These artisan keycaps from Eminent Crafts?
Oh, I have. I need them.
Yeah, so these are these cool Yu-Gi-Oh! Keycaps you can order to put on your keyboard. Fair warning, they're expensive. These things are like $60-$70 each.
Did you not say artisan?
Yeah, but they do seem like artisan is a good way to describe them. They're very well made. You pay
for quality.
So they've got what seems like a red-eyes black dragon.
Don't show it to him, Paul. I don't want to sell out yet. I haven't bought it yet.
A summon skull.
That y'all can buy that one.
A Karibo. And an Exodia the Forbidden One as your enter key.
That was the enter? That was space bar.
Or it might be a space bar. It looks like an enter to me, but
it might be an enter.
Either way, it's...
I still like it, though.
Yeah, I think this is really cool. This is definitely for somebody who, like, probably builds their own... Like, you know, you make, like, mechanical keyboards, or you kind of build your own stuff.
Because, you know, my keyboard, it's a Razer keyboard for gaming. So it's big, it's pronounced. But it's like it's all white, and I feel like just that red eyes black dragon was that escape key.
Yeah,
that would be an excellent accent. So, guys, if you would like to support a thriving young man, go ahead and send me the red eyes escape keycap. You can send it to Paul's address.
Wow. Okay.
And I'll be glad. And if you want to send me all the other ones too, hey, I'm not gonna stop you. I don't have enough keys for that though.
There's also this company, Gatherer's Tavern, which has announced a Yu-Gi-Oh collab, but we have not seen exactly what that entails.
What even is a Gatherer's Tavern? I don't know.
It is a company that makes what appears to basically be like acrylic. Like kind of keychain stuff.
Okay, figures. So they just do like acrylics and figures. Okay,
yeah, little figures and acrylics. So they're going to do a Yu-Gi-Oh collab. They have not yet revealed, at least at this time of us reading, what exactly the Yu-Gi-Oh things will be. But it stands to reason that there will probably be acrylic stands.
Those acrylic like keychains and stuff are so popular in the anime merch sphere. It's actually crazy that Yu-Gi-Oh does not have its own like large line of acrylic keychains.
Yeah, so just some cool Yu-Gi-Oh merch, you know. The merch train kind of marches on. If you're a Yu-Gi-Oh fan, it's a good time to be. It really is. Another
thing that bites into the Etsy sellers.
Yeah, or is a thing that they can make a knockoff of and sell you from China. I mean,
these are things they've already been making on Etsy.
That's actually true, you're right. Like, on Etsy, you could get all of this.
You could get keycaps. Like, all that stuff is already there.
Yeah, unofficially and probably for a lot less money. But if you're one of the types who's, like, big on your whole, like, official...
Gotta have it official. Then, everything on me official. This Macedol official. Even my shoes, Walmart brand, never mind.
Yeah. Alec, tell us about your Master Duel.
Yeah, so guys, check it out. So I got this new Master Duel hoodie. I am now a master duelist. I'm not a regular duelist. And I got it because I won a duelist cup.
Yeah.
No, Paul actually put on some... So what were they called?
This is the prizing for those Challenger Cups.
Challenger Cups.
From like a year ago.
And Paul already had a hoodie, so I got it this time.
Yeah.
No work, all reward.
Yeah, you're a master duelist now. Gotta respect him now.
I'm warm.
Yeah. So I think that's all the Yu-Gi-Oh! Unless I'm forgetting something obvious, maybe.
I think we covered everything I want to talk about.
Okay. Well,
but there's still more card game news.
Lay it on me, duelist.
So typically, I've been struggling to find more Pokemon theft stories. But one of our trusty viewers found one for me. Spider-Man, that menace, has been arrested for stealing $10,000 worth of Pokemon and other trading cards. Now look, Paul, in this security picture, you can see that that is in fact Spider-Man.
Yeah, it's a real deal. Hmm.
It turns out that J. Jonah Jameson may have been right about Spider-Man after all. So on March 16th, a man dressed as Spider-Man walked into Gaming Giant in Fairfax, Virginia, and stole $10,000 in Pokemon, Dragon Ball, and other cards. Up, an ad has shown up, and it is blocking my entire screen. Look at this. Oh, okay, it's gone now. Okay, cool. So where was I? Oh, my God, it came back. It just came back.
I hate advertising. Like, Dexerto is the worst. Oh, we got to stop using them. I know they get all the little fun, little kind of grimy stories and stuff that we like, but, like,
okay.
Their site's filled with the brim
of ads. I had to go back to the page where it doesn't show any ads. So here's a quote. we are devastated to say that on Friday night, after closing our store, was broken into and robbed, Gaming Giant said on Facebook. Our front door was broken down, and the culprit was wearing a masked Spider-Man hoodie, taking numerous graded slabs as well as sealed Pokemon products. All right, I think Spider-Man can do a little bit better than breaking down front doors. I played the Spider-Man game, and he can sneak in so many different ways. I have a feeling that that's not really Spider-Man. The store shared numerous photos of the suspect, and once the police received tips, they identified the suspect as Brown on March 19th. I guess that's his last name.
Maybe yeah, Joel Brown.
Joel Brown on March 19th.
It would have been kind of weird if they just, like, his name we is identified Brown. Him as Brown. That kind of sounds a little it's like racist.
It's like brown skin?
It's something.
But he's a 20-year-old, and he's been charged with burglary. And he was transported to the Fairfax County Adult Detention Center. Guys, all right. At least he wore a mask. You know, I get annoyed seeing these stories about people committing these crimes without at least trying to obscure their faces. But hey, maybe don't like dress up as a bright blue and red cartoon character or comic character. Because one, you look silly, and two, you know, thievery is supposed to be incognito. You're not supposed to be noticeable.
Thievery will not be tolerated at Hogwarts.
The thing is, everybody knows that one guy that has the like zip up full like Spider-Man hoodie. It's weird, and everyone's going to remember it. It's likely that someone saw that picture of Joel in the card shop and said, "Yo, that's Joel. He has that hoodie. He wears it all the time. He never takes it off."
Yeah, we know this guy.
But more importantly, he shouldn't be stealing cards. I get it. Cards are worth a lot of money. They said he was taking like graded slabs, and so you see a slab, you know, ooh, that's worth some dollars. But like,
yeah. I don't resist. Know. I mean, yeah, you gotta like not steal. There's nothing more to say about it. But there is something more to say about this next Pokemon story.
Uh-oh.
So it's kind of like two stories. Have you seen this new Team Rocket Pokemon set?
Yes, and only because I thought it was fake.
Yeah, so the Pokemon TCG has announced a Destined Rivals set that's got the nostalgic Team Rocket.
That's not what I was talking. Oh, wait, what?
Yeah. So there's one which is like a bunch of Team Rocket merch in Japan that you've probably seen that.
It's
like a briefcase and stuff that you can pre-order, and that's probably going to get scalped to hell and back.
Makes sense.
And there's actually just a TCG set that was also announced.
So the glory of Team Rocket is different?
Or yeah.
The same?
So to celebrate the upcoming Glory of Team Rocket trading card game set, which I guess is different, Pokemon fans who are listening, correct us. Let us know like exactly what the difference is.
We're noobs in your space, and all we do is disparage your game.
Yeah, we don't actually know that much about these items. But anyway, to celebrate this set, the Pokemon Company has announced that multiple special accessories will be sold exclusively at Pokemon Center stores and the Japanese Pokemon Center online store. So, it will include Team Rocket's Pokemon as well as Giovanni's Pokemon. This will be the third Japanese set to see the return of Trainer's Pokemon after Battle Partners in Heatwave Arena. I don't know what that means. But one accessory in particular has become increasingly sought after. The Attach Case set will include 30 booster packs, several deck accessories, a playmat, and more. It's currently unknown if it will include a promo card like other Japanese special accessory sets. I would imagine it probably will. But what makes the item even more in demand is the fact that the Japanese Pokemon centers often get products that never make it out of Japan, and this specifically calls back to the Pokemon TCG's 20th anniversary Team Rocket special case that was released in 2016. So you can see that there's already like a bunch of pre-order listings for this little briefcase that they've got.
Looks fire.
It's kind of got the little Team Rocket
logo. Even though it's literally just black with a red R on it, but we're so...
But you know, like, that does something like, for people. It does something for people.
Being raised in the 90s, that's iconic.
Yeah, so there's already a bunch of pre-orders on eBay, north of $10,000.
Woo! 10,000?
Okay, so here's something that I didn't know that kind of clarifies what we were wondering. Pokemon The Glory of Team Rocket will be released in English as part of Destined Rivals. That is, which is the next main set to come to the Pokemon TCG following the release of Pokemon Journey Together, which is due out this week. So, yeah, really cool looking, you know, Team Rocket apparel sort of briefcase thing.
So you're getting one then, huh?
I wish. Maybe the Pokemon Company will send me one.
Like, They never do not watch our podcast.
Yeah. To the one Pokemon Company employee who listens to this on their commute to work, please send us one.
It's like they just hate watch.
Yeah.
You guys just don't play Pokemon. Fucking stop Yu-Gi-Oh talking about podcast. Us.
Yeah, so I thought that was kind of cool. I got to also admit, this Elite Trainer box for the Destined Rival set looks really cool.
Oh, yeah. Somebody's going to get hit over the head with that in Costco.
Giovanni and this Mewtwo.
This will be the one time it's appropriate for all the violence in the Pokemon community.
I guess it would make sense. It's over a Team Rocket product, so that's a good reason
but,
to
fight. You know, don't do that, guys. I know, you know, Team Rocket's the bad guys, but let's act like good guys, you know? Let's
Let's
not get in fights in parking lots. Though
hero.
I kind of expect anyone that listens to our podcast to already just not be on that kind of a wave. I feel like...
I mean, I would hope not, but...
I feel like we would have, like, pissed off those people to by now, and they would not be listening
yeah,
to us.
Yeah, like, if you're a Pokemon scalper and you listen to this podcast, yeah. A, stop. B, like, stop.
Wait, stop listening or stop scalping?
No, like, A, stop, and then B, like, also stop.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, you can listen if you want. It's just that, like, we're not going to... Anyway, the point is, cool new Pokemon Team Rocket thing. Next card game story, I guess, if you have any more. I want to hear about the Digimon thing.
So, I mean, this Which one's is like a bit card more game than and just like card games. Everything. But yeah, I can get into it.
Yeah.
So, last week...
Well, are there any other card game things before we get into it? Since it'll probably pivot us to... Shadowverse. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Shadowverse.
We got sent this by a fan.
So, we are obligated to talk about it. Even if neither of us have played Shadowverse. I have played Shadowverse, but it was many years ago. And I did buy one of their new starter decks when the TCG Shadowverse Evolve came out. I haven't played it, but I have it.
Yeah, so there is this new Shadowverse game. And I thought it was a new game, but as it turns out, it's kind of like just an update to a existing game, Shadowverse Worlds Beyond.
It's the sequel to the Shadowverse app game.
Yeah, so
and Steam game, I believe.
Getting a new update that is apparently a reboot of some kind.
Yeah, just think of it as a Shadowverse 2.
Yeah, so here's sort of the press release, and this is just something that people who play Shadowverse will probably be able to better understand or appreciate. But releasing on June 17th, 2025, Shadowverse Worlds Beyond, the newest title in the Shadowverse franchise, will be a free-to-play, competitive online, collectible card game available on the App Store, Google Play, Steam, and Epic Game Store. It's going to be available worldwide in Japanese, English, Chinese, and Korean. And several changes have been made to previously announced mechanics and features to ensure the best gameplay experience possible. I'm not going to get into detail about all of these. There are some new mechanics like Super Evolution, and apparently there's like others as well. But
you don't know the base mechanics, so the new mechanics like
bonus, don't even... A bonus play point? I don't want to sound like I don't care. I think
the play point is supposed to be a boon for the going second player, I believe.
Yeah, there's like changes to starting hands, changes to crests. I really have to apologize. I'm putting this in here because I know that there are people who play and might not have heard about this news, although I guess if you play, you probably have heard about the news. But
well, maybe they need returning players. Maybe they used to play Shadowverse, but they stopped playing.
True, that's true, true. They've changed some keywords, apparently. And how they work and stuff. Intimidate or barrier.
It's essentially what we've been asking for in Yu-Gi-Oh! It was like a reboot. The Shadowverse has existed for quite a while now in the mobile card gaming space, and now they're aiming to be more competitive within that space. You know, games, they want to fight better with games like Marvel Snap and, Hearthstone is definitely still around.
I do think that it also is a good opportunity to just sort of talk about how, like, I think that any card game's got to have a digital client to survive gotta today. I mean, as we'll get into, Digimon has announced their own, and, you know, I just think that, like, if you're a card game right now and you don't have one, get on that, you know.
We're running into the same issue that we have with the live gaming surge. Card games are a little bit worse than live service games because we actually have even less time to play them. You know,
nobody... A card game is such a time commitment.
Yeah, nobody... Yeah. You don't get to just play your favorite card game every single day, right? You have a job, you have school, you have all these other commitments. You likely get... 1 or 2 days a week where you get to enjoy your card game or games, and card games take a while to play. You can't just start a game in and finish it in 10 minutes.
Yeah, you don't get to queue up like you do in your favorite live service
game. And there's lag time between games. So typically, you might only get like maybe like 4 or 5 hours of card gaming, and that's on like the far end. So if you don't have a digital client where someone can then fit in that card game in the, you know, the hours between like, you know, going to work or on their lunch breaks, then your game could just fall off completely.
Yeah, it could fall out of someone's sort of lifestyle. And so I think it's just important to have those things. You know, right now, like, Yu-Gi-Oh's got one, but I remember there was a time when, like, Yu-Gi-Oh didn't have an official client. Yeah, you could play, like, Dueling Book, you could play EDO Pro, but, like, those were much more hardcore options, like, that average Joe might not really know about. And so it's good to have something that the normies can just download and play and queue up and, like, kind of stay in the rhythm of playing the card game.
This reminded me of an old memory. I remember back when we were in the dorms, my dorm was cheap, so I could hear between the walls. Yeah. And I'll never forget the day when I was working on an assignment, and I heard EDO Pro sounds from behind the wall.
Oh, someone was playing.
Someone's playing EDO Pro. I know these sounds anywhere.
Yeah, I know. That's kind of how it is. Like, you never know who plays Yu-Gi-Oh.
I didn't even know who my neighbors were. They were playing EDO Pro.
So, yeah, shout-outs to Shadowverse Worlds Beyond coming out this summer. Give it a crack.
And now on to the digital news.
This is all kind of digital news, huh?
I guess so. So, Digimon Con 2025 was this past weekend, and it promised to have updates on games, anime, card games, manga, you name it, it was there. And I have this kind of this list of all the things that got announced, and I'll focus on the things that I care about. But number one is the new Digimon story video game, Digimon Time Stranger. This is the first Digimon video game since Digimon Hacker's Memory, and that was a sequel to Cyber Sleuth, and that was, I think, like 10 years ago. So it's
What about Digimon Survive?
Oh, Survive. I always forget about Survive.
I know that was like a thing. It might be kind of different.
Survive wasn't quite finished, and it wasn't in the Digimon story series, is interesting. But we're getting, was it what I call it just now? Time Stranger, which is an RPG with some, like, I guess you could call it like a Pokemon-style monster collector, but with a Digimon twist of digivolving and de-digivolving over and over again to try and build the most powerful Digimon that you can.
Yeah, all while the trailer for it. I remember we kind of compared it to Persona. We did,
yeah. Well, especially the art style, right? It's done by some of the people from that team.
Yeah, like Atlas or something.
And it's a really good looking game. If you used to play Digimon and you haven't played in a long time, check it out. It does look good. Mm-hmm. But moving on, there's another video game, but this is on the card game side of things. Digimon Elysian. Digimon Elysian, it is essentially a digital client for the Digimon TCG, but it's a little bit more than that. I would call it more of a
it felt to me like kind of a mix of, so basically, like, it is a simulator for the card game is my understanding, but
it's not like a Master Duel simulator.
Yeah, it's not quite like a Master Duel. Like, it seems like there are like other gameplay like elements, like there's like characters and a vague story kind of involved.
I guess it kind of makes me think of Cardfight Vanguard Dear Days, or one of our older Yu-Gi-Oh video games where they had stories, even if they weren't great.
Yeah, like kind of maybe closer to like a Legacy of the Duelist vibe, or you're thinking even
Legacy
more.
Of the Duelist makes sense. That makes sense to me. We still don't know a lot about this client because we've only seen cards from like the first few sets. I want to say BT3 is the newest card that we saw in that trailer. We don't know if we're going to start off from Caveman Digimon, which, you know, it is what it is. Mm. Or if they're going to, like, just include everything up to, like, BT20 or something.
Yeah. So that would kind of make it feel a little like Duel Links-like, I would say. It's like, since Duel Links started with such a early kind of primitive type of Yu-Gi-Oh, but over time has grown to more closely resemble the modern game and like kind of modern decks and archetypes.
I don't want, because we always talk about how we don't want our next Yu-Gi-Oh game to be just a simulator. Mm-hmm. You know, we want there to be story elements. We want it to be more of like an RPG. And I still want that for this as well. But the simulator is needed, you know, for the more hardcore communities that don't care so much for playing some like playing out the story of this new game. They want to like play test. They want to, you know, use expensive cars they can't afford. And
we know that like these companies obviously don't want these fan made sims to really exist. Like,
and
I know, like,
DCGO does exist.
Yeah, like, Digimon has DCGO and stuff. So they, you know, I think if you're gonna chastise these fans for making alternatives, then you better make your own. So. Yep. What do you, so you, the Digimon player, what do you think? Like, you into this?
I mean, I have no choice but to be into it. Mostly because if I don't support it and it's like fails or shuts down, then we'll never get anything ever again. But I mean, that aside, I mean, I am excited for it. Just the concept of having more Digimon to consume is wonderful for me. It's one of my favorite franchises, like, period. And, I love playing Digimon. I play it on the weekends. It's, like, my second favorite or first favorite card game. I'm really not sure at this point. But I'm really looking forward to it. We don't have a lot of details, so I'll have to hold my thoughts until we know what we're really getting.
Right.
But that's not all. It was at DigimonCon.
Yeah, I imagine there's a few more things.
There was the Digimon Adventure Beyond promo video, which was a very unique animation because it was the kids from the Digimon Adventure series. That's Ty, Matt, Sora, Izzy, and some of the
Joe
kids.
Joe,
Mimi, TK, Kari, but also some of the kids from Adventure 2, because there was Iori, and I want to say Yoli was in there, and Ken was there too. It's strange. It's a promotional video that takes place before the canonical end of Digimon Adventure, where all the kids grow up and they live their lives, and it's a kind of a look at some of the adventures they had but never bothered to tell the stories of or animate before. And it's a really nice video, because if you've ever seen the Digimon Last Evolution, which was as close to the ending of Digimon as it ever got, all the kids lost their Digimon, and it was a tearjerker of a movie. And in my soul, I am broken because of it. But seeing Digimon Adventure Beyond kind of helped prepare that.
So this is that, or it's like it's not that. Like, what?
So it's super strange. It is set either before or after Last Evolution. Either they got their Digimon partners back, which would make me very happy, or this is before they lose them, and then I'm sad again.
I don't know which one I would prefer, because I mean, I feel like if they got them back, then I guess that kind of like is a slap in the face to whatever sense of closure would have existed before.
But it was a sad closure.
But it's also like, you know,
it wasn't a closure I was happy to have.
Isn't there also a different new anime? Or
yep.
Okay, that's what I was more interested in, really.
So there's a new anime series they announced coming out in October 2025, Digimon Beat Break. And we actually know next to nothing about it. Actually, now that I think about it, did I even watch this trailer? I don't think I did. It was only 30 seconds. I didn't bother watching it because I knew it couldn't show me anything interesting.
Well, no, that's cool. You can give us a very... like, just rapid, like, what are your first impressions? I know that's typically how these kind of go.
So it's big on its purple color. I don't know why they love this neon purple color so much. And everything has, like, these red eyes. It's so eerie and a little, like, off-putting. Yeah, so it's 30 seconds. It really just rolls straight into the title card, but you do get to see what I assume to be the main character and his partner Digimon. They're basically bathed in this purple light with these red little eyes and these glowing yellow marks on them. It seems a little sinister. Like, does that picture look like a good guy to you?
I mean, it gives me like vibes of like he's sort of a Warrior by Night type of, like, a kid with his Digimon who's, like, kind of getting up to some stuff.
And Dark Knight.
In the wee hours of the night.
It's like, so
going out and, like, fighting Digimon and stuff.
Maybe he's got a serious case of Chunibyo. Like, I mean, thinks he's cooler than he is.
Wouldn't someone argue that if you, like, watch Digimon, that probably is just who you are?
All right. Okay. Like, wow. All right. I guess,
I mean, even Yu-Gi-Oh, I guess
Pokemon fans are so well adjusted.
They're probably worse.
we don't fight cool. in Costco's.
I'm excited because, like, to me, anytime Digimon gets a new anime, I'm just interested. Like, I think that it's, I know, like, you know, you're kind of probably seen as more of, like, the real Digimon fanatic, you and Alex are, but, like, I really liked Digimon
it's true,
a lot.
I don't like it.
And I don't know. Like, I always think that, like, Digimon has something to offer that, like, Pokemon didn't quite, like, scratch for a lot of people. I don't know if it was, like, just the Digimon seemed a little bit more, slightly more, not, like, mature in, like, a weird way, but just, like, you know, you had a singular Digimon partner for the most part, and, like, so I felt like it was more about the bond that you had with the Digimon. Now,
Ash and Pikachu certainly had a bond.
Yeah, sure, but, like...
But I do think the appeal to Digimon was the danger of it. Pokemon always seemed so safe. The Pokemon battled each other, never you, except for when Pikachu kept shocking Ash, or the Spearow attacked Ash, or the many times Pokemon attack people. Yeah. But for the most part, those Digimon kids were in danger.
Yeah, there was definitely more of a sense of danger, for sure.
Like, when that Kawagamon attacked them, it wasn't like, hey, I want to eat your Digimon. It's like, no, I'm trying to eat all of you.
Yeah, so I look forward to that. I mean, I know we watched on Digimon Adventure 2020. We watched Ghost Game.
Both were not great.
Ghost Game was serviceable, but a bit episodic. And Digimon Adventure 2020 was... not my cup of tea.
Had it not been a reboot of the Digimon Adventure series, I probably would have liked it more. But I couldn't help but compare it to the original. And I'm not saying, oh, it looks bad or anything. It didn't have any of the charm. But maybe it was because we grew up on the dub. And we were used to the voice acting. We were used to getting everyone's insights. The Japanese subtitled version did not hit. Not for me, at least.
So is that all the Digimon?
I mean, those are all the main things. There were some, like, manga announcements and, like, other things that, for the most part, people don't care about.
Okay, yeah. Well, something that's been going on today, like, literally as we've been recording this, is Marvel has been doing this live stream. You saw this earlier, we were talking about
How could I forget? I imagine it's still going on right now.
It's finished now. It's finished.
Oh, okay,
now.
It's done.
So, basically, they were doing this live stream where they were announcing the cast and, like, all the characters that are going to be shown in the upcoming Avengers Doomsday film. There's been a lot of, you know, just interest, intrigue, criticism, doubts, whatever you want to say about the state of the MCU, what this Avengers Doomsday film is, like, who's going to be in it, what's it going to mean, what's it going to, all this stuff, right? And I think, like, up to now, it was a big question mark as to, like, what even, like, who are the Avengers right now? You know what I mean?
We didn't know.
Like, if you've been following these kind of Phase 4, Phase 5 Marvel films and Disney Plus shows, there's not really, like, a currently established group. A lot of people are sort of, like, MIA / just doing their own thing post-Endgame, and so it's a little weird. But by letting us know over the course of 5.5 hours who is going to be in this Marvel Avengers Doomsday film, they've hyped some fans up. But before we get into who it was, I just want to say that was either marketing genius or some fucking sadistic bullshit.
Man, because I didn't know this event was happening today. I was kind of out and about, and then someone just messaged, big Marvel event today. And I was like, oh, really? Is it going to be a new trailer or something? That'll be dope. And there was a live stream going on. And so I open up the live stream, and from what I saw, I'm like, oh, okay, they must be waiting. Like, the stream hasn't started yet. Because all I saw was a chair.
I thought it was like a waiting room.
Like a name on it, and I was like, okay, I'll just come back later. And then I came back to it maybe like 2 hours later just to discover that is in fact the entire live stream of just chairs.
Every like 15 minutes, they'd shift the camera and you'd see the name on the back of the chair of the actor who's going to be in Doomsday.
And like people were really into it. I was seeing people post updates every time.
Like people were very excited, and I'm not taking away from the excitement. Like, don't get me wrong. I'll be in theaters watching Doomsday. That's great. I'm just like, this is such a joke. Like, why are y'all doing this? Y'all couldn't just release like a trailer or like. I thought that the actors were going to be in the thing.
They didn't even have... That had to be the most money-efficient live stream for like for a movie I've ever seen.
It's a bunch of like actor director chairs with name tags on the back of them just every 10, 15 minutes.
Every chair is worth like $30.
Yeah, that's generous. Yeah, like you know, and so they... At the end... As it turns out, Robert Downey Jr. is like there at the end. They made a condensed version of the trailer that they published right after it was done. It's like an hour or a minute and a half. And it just kind of shows all the names kind of in fast motion. And then like Robert Downey Jr. shows up at the end and he's like, Avengers Doomsday is in production. And then
he said it just like that. He was deflated.
No, I mean, he was, you know, and that's like the trailer. It's like, yep, guys, it's in production. It's a movie that is happening. And it's like, I swear, like, fandom just sucks these days. Not in a bad way. This is not an anti-Marvel thing. I just think it's just like, they really like...
I mean, you're MCU Paul. We know.
Yeah, I know. They just have people in the palm of their hands. Like, because I know there are people who actually sat in that live stream for like 5 hours, like just getting these names.
Like, couldn't be me. It's like, because you know it's all going to be in a list somewhere later.
And yeah, like I've literally found a whole Screen Rant article. I'm not going to go through all these names. It's a lot of people that you kind of expect. And some new people from like this upcoming Fantastic Four thing and Thunderbolts and X-Men. So a lot of characters will be in Doomsday. I guess you couldn't have imagined.
It's like, oh, a lot of characters going to be in the Avengers movie? Who would have thought?
Yeah, so cool, exciting. We might have to get Chris on for an episode.
We gotta get his analysis.
Yeah, Chris is kind of the resident, like...
He knows everything MCU.
MCU nerd. He is very, very, very informed and opinionated. And honestly, I trust his opinions more than mine. Because all I know is, like, I'll watch the movie. I'm interested in it.
I mean, you haven't missed an MCU thing in the last, like, three, four years.
I've been trying to watch them.
Like, I think the moment... I'm trying to become an MCU fan. I want to say it was probably after Shang-Chi... You just picked up on everything happening. Yeah,
post-Shang-Chi, I think I've watched pretty much all of it. Maybe I've missed one or two shows.
Some would say you missed the boat. Like Endgame was like the real show.
Yeah, it's so funny. I didn't see Endgame. I saw Infinity War. I didn't see Endgame. So like I don't actually know how Endgame
Like what ends. A hipster. You got into Marvel when people were falling off of it.
Yeah, I got into Marvel at the time most people would say, oh my God, the sun's like blasting me right now. Yeah, so Doomsday is in production. I guess you didn't know that.
Yeah.
But now you do.
Like so. Million strong live stream.
Sorry, I'm being rude about it. I know for a lot of people this means everything. I just thought that the means by which they slowly rolled those names out.
I found them disrespectful. Like, just. It was like, it's like it was, to me, it was kind of like dangling like a treat over a dog's head. Like, you want it? You want it? Like, because you're just dangling these names over people's mouths and they're watering. Like, I want more. Give me more. And they won't move the camera or they won't move the chairs for like another 15 minutes.
You know what would have been so funny? Yeah, they did like the Twitch method where, like, you got to get a certain amount of donations before we move this camera. Like, we're not going to reveal the next person until, like, we get like X thousand in donations. Imagine that.
That's how they fund the next Marvel project.
Yeah, like we're running low on money, guys. So you got to donate to know who the next actor or actress will be.
In other news, I have a video game story.
Do you?
Yeah, I never thought I'd ever be saying this aloud, but famous football or soccer player Cristiano Ronaldo will be making an appearance in the new Fatal Fury game.
Oh, that's an interesting collab. What's that about?
So, guys, if you don't know, Fatal Fury is an old but now being revitalized fighting game series. And if you don't know, Cristiano Ronaldo is one of the greatest soccer players to ever do it. I don't know that for a fact. I don't watch soccer, but
he's
also
a YouTuber now, apparently. He has like a huge YouTube channel, and like he made it like last year, and like it blew up.
Well, he might just be the GOAT of soccer. I might be wrong, but he might be the GOAT. Anyway, so he'll be in Fatal Fury, City of the Wolves, but not as like a cameo. he'll actually be a playable character. So it says on March 25th, 2025, it was officially announced that Ronaldo will be joining the cast of Fighters in Southtown as a playable character with his own special moveset. A huge move for the historic fighting game series and first for any major fighting game franchise. And no, we're not going to include Multiverses with LeBron James. That
although
was
I mean,
a mess.
Well, sorry, go ahead. I have some other thoughts.
No, later. What were we going to say?
Well, I was going to say, like, this sounds crazy as a headline at first until you realize that, like, I guess every game's kind of doing this now, though, huh? Like, just I mean, normal person is, like, in the game.
I mean, in video gaming in general, yes. But in fighting games,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, that's true. This is the,
it hasn't happened
feels
here.
Like one of the firsts for fighting games.
The we've had, like, actors and stuff doing, like, mocap in fighting games. Especially in, like, what, the Mortal Kombat series. They've been good for it. But never just, like, just an athlete.
Okay. Go on. Sorry.
The someone said, I don't know whose quote this is. So this is like seeing Obama being a playable character in Blaze Blue. Like, it's a wild take.
That
but
sounds like a tweet.
Sure, definitely a tweet somewhere.
Yeah.
Some people are now referring to this as the golden age of gaming. They must be Ronaldo fans because
I guess that's like a little quick chance to talk about like what do we think of the whole like people like just. People like celebrities or whatever in these games now because like I know there's like a billion of them in Fortnite at this point. You can play as like Ariana Grande or Mr. Beast or whatever, and I know like Nicki Minaj was in like Call of Duty,
so
you know LeBron's in Multiverse. It's like yay nay, like cool.
It depends on the type of game, right? For me, I like to get immersed in my game. So if it's like a story driven game with iconic characters that I care about a lot, I won't like it very much. You know, if I'm playing, let's say, Monster Hunter, right? I'm playing Monster Hunter, and then, like, Cardi B, like, jumps out of a monster's mouth and starts to twerk. That's, as hot as that is, very upsetting.
Yeah.
It pulls me out of the experience.
For sure.
But, you know, if this is Call of Duty and, like, LeBron James drop kicks Nicki Minaj and they go to the gulag or whatever, I don't care. It's Call of Duty.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I feel like with games like Fortnite and stuff, it kind of just doesn't matter. Like, you know that it's just like sort of a little paid collaboration thing. And I think that companies have found that that is a big way of kind of getting Gen Z involved, but also in a way that typically doesn't seriously piss off most millennials because they just sort of think of it
as
a joke.
No one has high expectations of like Fortnite and its story.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a very small like group of people who care a lot about that sort of thing, but compared to the wider Fortnite verse, it's not a big deal. Speaking of Fortnite, they have the last athlete they use is Shohei Ohtani in Fortnite of the Dodgers. Probably one of the best baseball players in the world right now.
I think that's interesting how like you can sort of see the difference in the way that it's received. Because like, you know, on this podcast, we're oftentimes talking about like Magic the Gathering and how like there's so much tension about that. Like,
breaking
you know, you're
kind
of like breaking the immersion, breaking the established history of Magic. It's so sacred and so pure. And people, you know, they don't want their universes beyond and their little secret layers because it's all awful. According to them, not
I
their
want
words, not
Chase
mine.
To eat a Krabby Patty and then ride on Sparkle Flutter. I don't know My Little Pony names.
Yeah, and you know, not taking a strong stance one way or another. Like some people really like the collab, some people don't. But it's interesting that like in gaming, they're usually not received as badly on average.
But I think it does matter what type of game. Like if we're playing Final Fantasy, right? I don't want to see Terry Crews on screen.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
Actually,
I
think, it might be badass, but.
But yeah, any
okay,
game,
someone else. Insert anyone other than Terry Crews.
Any game with a story, I don't think I would want it.
Though Samuel Jackson would just add to literally any game he's in. It doesn't even matter what game it's
you
in.
You know, Ariana Grande was in like a mobile Final Fantasy game, I think.
Oh, she was. Brave Exvius, I believe.
Yeah. Which, like, I don't think
those
anybody,
mobile games.
Yeah,
no one cares.
They'll do whatever. Like, I don't think anybody really cares, like, too much if there's, like, a kind of strange collaboration. But just in general, it seems like gaming's doing more of that. Like, the celebrity is in the game sort of deal, so.
But in general, I don't care for celebrities getting into, like, older titles. Only because it feels like where the game is entering into this, like.
It's sellout era.
Yeah, and we're going to a completely different era. We cannot go back. We are in a different time and world.
Yeah, that's true. There's kind of that sense that, like, this is a game that is fighting tooth and nail to kind of stay relevant. And in doing so, maybe has compromised some of its identity, some of its uniqueness by just being like, you can play as so-and-so, like just this real-life person.
I don't know Cristiano Ronaldo, obviously, because I don't play soccer, or am I rich? But maybe he was a big Fatal Fury player back in the day. It's an old game series. He's an old guy. I mean, there's a real chance he's a Fatal Fury player, and you might argue that the greatest thing a gamer can achieve in life is being put into one of their favorite game series. So if that's the narrative we're going with, then I guess I don't hate it. But
yeah, there's also like one thing that's like very personally odd to me, and this is probably like it might just be a me thing. Playing as another human being is always strange to me. Like literally, like I'm removing it from the game, but just like being like, you are playing as another, you are controlling this other human.
You ever play 2K?
A real life human's movie. Yeah, maybe that's why I could never get into those games, like those sports games. Mm-hmm. I just don't. Because that's a good point you raise. Like, technically, the 2K games, like Madden and all that stuff, like, that's exactly what you're doing.
You ever play WWE? I mean, it's just people.
Yeah, so, people. I don't know. Maybe, I'm a weirdo.
I mean, no, you're not wrong, because every so often, people try and get me to play, you know, the new, or the latest college football game, or the latest, like, 2K football game, because they know I like football, but I actually don't like playing those games. And then, you know what I always tell them? My favorite football game is called Tecmo Bowl Kickoff. And yeah, it's because it's completely fantasy. Even though the game is basically 8-bit, it's completely fantasy with mostly made-up teams. And I get to make my own characters and make my own rosters and call my own plays.
Yeah,
I'm not actually all that interested in the, you know,
kind of recreating the simulation of real life.
Yeah, football. Like, you know, I get it. The 49ers are a great team. I'm just not interested in playing as Pat Mahomes. This is not my thing.
Well, here's a quick one. Game Informer's back. You might remember like about a year ago.
The Chiefs got the colors mixed up. I had to defend myself before I got flamed online for not knowing my football teams.
You might remember like maybe like not a year ago, like half a year ago or so, last August basically. Game Informer like shut down. They had that big announcement that, you know, they were getting shut down, by GameStop. You know, that was the previous owner. They're back. The long running gaming magazine has big plans for new memberships and a return to print, which is exciting.
Whoa. Look, I love Game Informer and I would love to see it come back. And I would even buy a subscription immediately.
You
will. But, No, I will. Here's my thing.
Okay.
They really might want to talk to whoever this is to talk about bringing it back to print.
Might be tough.
They're moving in the wrong direction here.
Let's get the details.
Okay.
On Tuesday, Editor-in-Chief Matt Miller announced that Gunzilla Games, I don't know too much about them.
I'm Googling
has acquired. Yeah, take a quick little search for that. Has acquired the rights to the gaming magazine, helping to bring the site and its archives back online. GameStop, which previously owned Game Informer, shut the beloved magazine down last August and laid off its entire staff after a more than 30-year run. The team teased a comeback last week and has already published a series of new reviews for titles released during the magazine's hiatus, along with a belated list of the best games of 2024. Anyway, its new owners, Gunzilla Games, okay, so here's a little bit of information on it, is a game developer based in Europe that's currently working on a Battle Royale title called Off the Grid. Interesting kind of name for a title.
That's literally all I can find about these people.
Yes, Game Informer wasn't too expensive to buy. Well, Miller says the magazine will continue operating as an independent editorial outlet under a new entity called Game Informer Incorporated. Our intent is to continue to focus on highlighting the coolest games, celebrating the history and legacy of the gaming industry, and shining a spotlight on the creators and players who are charting its future. So in addition to bringing back its websites, Game Informer also plans to resurrect its print magazine, too, with new membership and subscription benefits. They're not offering a subscription just yet, but you can sign up for an account on its website to receive updates.
I'm getting Game Informer. I'm going to tell you that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I got to say, I am proud to, or not proud, I mean, I'd be proud, but like pleased to hear this because I was a Game Informer kid. I had a print like issue. It was one of the handful of magazines that I got as a kid. I also remember like Nintendo Power.
Nintendo Power.
It was a good time. There are a few others. So cool. Like, good for them. It actually is really good to hear. This reminds me a lot of like when Tango Gameworks or whatever, like the ones who did Hi-Fi Rush and like Xbox shut them down, but then they were able to be, you know, reclaimed by another company and exist again. I like these stories. I think these are good.
And for me, a return to print media is nice because we're in the digital age and everybody's losing money left and right with print media. It's been done the same way for so long, and it's just not hitting the way it used to. It's barely
making it, yeah.
And my thing is, I didn't appreciate Game Informer when it was on its last leg. I didn't truly appreciate it until it was gone. And I had a Game Informer subscription not long ago, 2020?
Yeah.
Somewhere around there, I had my Game Informer subscription. It ran out, and I wasn't worried about it. I was like, I don't really need these anymore. But I've missed having them. We started this podcast, we had to look up stories about gaming, and I've seen the deterioration of game journalism. And that's, I'm not saying all game journalists are garbage. I'm just saying the vast majority of it is trash.
I think something big that's really happened in the last maybe decade, at least 5 years, really more like decade, is, you know, that gaming discourse is shit. Like, it's really bad.
It's focused on social media.
It's all, like, social media is how you find information about stuff and news and leaks, and it feels like it's so much more about takes. Mm-hmm. Who's got a good take or a bad take? That's an L take on this thing.
What big, like, streamer is playing what game?
Yeah, like, streamers are playing these games, and people have these, like, opinions on these games, and it feels like a lot of the conversation is noisy, but not particularly productive. And so often getting meaningful reviews or updates or news and just like kind of genuine looks at gaming is difficult because it's oftentimes clouded in, you know, I hate to bring up a sore spot from last week, right? But like Assassin's Creed Shadows, right? There's just so much. It feels like it's impossible to actually hear anyone say anything about the gameplay of Assassin's Creed Shadows because it's colored by whether you want it to succeed or not. And I think everyone is responsible. Like, there are people who are, you know, attacking Assassin's Creed because it's so woke and it's this and that and DEI and Ubisoft deserves to die and burn. But also people who are like, I'm supporting Assassin's Creed because they left some clapback tweet on Twitter or like, you know, this, like all these things, or I want to get, you know, this is my way to sticking it to the grifters.
You know, I thought about something. I swear to God, if Game Informer has a single article that lists a tweet as a source, I will cancel that subscription all over
again. Yeah, because I remember when I was subscribed to Game Informer, you know, they would do like these like long write-ups where they interviewed multiple people and like they'd really gathered sources and they would like highlight an aspect of gaming or like interviewing like a developer or a director or whatever. And it was such like rich content. And I feel like nowadays the closest you get now is like some out of context quote from some interview from some developer where they said like there's like this one little line and we're taken out of context and now like everyone's arguing about it.
But you're not actually arguing about the quote itself.
You're arguing about
the quote tweet you saw about it.
Yeah, and the vague, you know, culture war related intent behind the way that the quote is presented and all that stuff. And it's like, it's difficult to find just genuine talk and like glorification about gaming as a thing, like the process of, you know, developing games and stuff and like finding reviews. And nowadays, half the time it's like, how many active Steam players does the game have? Because that is this measure of like success. If it has more, then that's good. If it's bad, blah, blah, blah. Or like
I remember it used to be all we cared about is what is the game good or bad? What's the score?
Yeah.
Like,
and the score thing even has been commoditized to some degree where it's...
Well, because now we have these aggregates.
Yeah, you find your little Metacritic score and like it means something. Like, it's got an 87 and that's like lower than its predecessor, which had an 89. And it's just like, okay, great. But like, is the game like good? Can we talk about the game? Not so much just all of the stuff surrounding it.
The rhetoric and the politics and the bad, like the bad actors.
So I say all this to say that I hope that, you know, if Game Informer can be something of a return to form like that, I would be, they'll have my subscription, honestly. Like, I think they will. I like reading meaningful, like researched, thoughtful gaming articles. So also I got to give a shout out to IGN, which I know people hate IGN, but I got to give a shout out to them because they're one of the only like outlets that have really like weathered the storm of the past like just decade.
I mean, weathered is a nice way to put it.
Yeah, like people have many opinions on them. This is not about like the fact that they reviewed some game and gave it a score someone didn't like. I'm just saying that like in general, in this world where we've seen so many like journalism sites just fall to the wayside or completely like lean in hard to just controversy or drama, it's nice to know that a few have made it through. Not to say that IGN hasn't stumbled, but you know, just a little shout out to them.
I will say they post fewer bloat articles than the others, or at least they don't let them get to the homepage as much.
Yeah, so cool. Shout outs to Game Informer. They're back. Awesome. Got any more stories?
No.
Cool. Well, in that case, I think it is time, as you know.
Pot time.
Do a little pot. Got some viewer questions for us. Remember, guys, you can leave these below in the video description if you ever want us to read them out and chat.
Also, good reminder. Boy, are we going to read? Because these are long.
Yeah, we are. Also, good reminder to become a channel member if you want to support the podcast. I always got to throw that out there. You know, it's $2.99 a month. You don't have to support us, but it helps if you do, because as you know,
it just says you love us and we love you.
We do. We do. Okay. Four questions for the day.
I'll say it to my significant other, but I'll say it to you guys. What's that say about me?
So, hello to my favorite podcast, pun intended.
Aha.
Someone said a podcast. Do you know that it had been 5 years since the last time Konami updated their rule set? Due to having no new anime to introduce new mechanics, I feel like the game is in constant stagnation with recent card designs. What do you think can be added to the current rule sets that make the game more interesting? My take is that they should add attribute weaknesses to cards. Example, water monsters deal double damage to fire monsters so that players have to be careful with their attributes, which in turn may make Egyptian god cards more viable due to being divine and having no elemental weakness. But what do you think? First of all, thank you for the question.
I actually really like this.
This is a really thoughtful one. You first.
All right. So Paul and I have actually experimented with elemental weaknesses before in Yu-Gi-Oh! But not quite like this.
The alignment thing.
Yeah, the alignment duel that we did based off the old Yu-Gi-Oh! Games. Mm-hmm. We did, but we were using that with old cards too. I never really imagined what it would be like to do that with modern cards. I do think it would make the battle phase very relevant again.
Yeah, I think a lot of thoughts, but I'll focus on that one first, which is I do think it'd be cool to see the battle phase kind of matter a bit, where how exactly that would be implemented, I don't know, but let's assume it's sort of like how the old games were, where basically if a water monster battles a fire monster, it just destroys it automatically. Let's say that's how it is. It would just win the fight. Because I think that like, it might be asking a lot to kind of remember to do attack point modulations and stuff. So I think that maybe just having it be a flat, like,
water. There are cases where we can do some nonsense with those attack stats where it's like, okay, do I double it now or after I get the attack boost? Well, it gets this boost during damage calculation. Is that double?
Yeah,
two?
So that might be a little bit tough, but that could be cool. I think it would be neat to explore Yu-Gi-Oh! Really on the subject of attributes, maybe even having like a mono attribute sort of thing. Like, you know how so many games,
oh, we get just locked by it?
Where you're locked, like, maybe not like that shouldn't perhaps be like the master rule, but it could be maybe an interesting alt format. Or maybe it should be the master rule. Like, because you know how in most games, you're like locked into basically like a max of two colors. Like in most card games, that's kind of the general rule.
It's only Yu-Gi-Oh! Where it's so free-form.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Kind of lets you do whatever. I think it'd be neat to see like a Yu-Gi-Oh! Game like where it's just monotype or like dual type only. To zoom out on the question a little more, we haven't gotten a rule set change since 2020, and 2020 was just like the master rule for revision.
Yeah, they were essentially just trying to undo the last master rule.
Yeah, kind of walking a lot of that back. So I think a lot of that comes down to just the fact that there isn't an anime to model any new rule set after.
Which I do think after Lynx and Pendulums, they probably were really struggling to come up with things. Like, what do we even do now?
Or even, I would say, they probably are like, man, I don't know how much more, like, your summoning type-wise this game can, like, fit.
Because, I mean, they made more summoning types, but then they had, but then they're like, okay, we don't know what to do. Let's change the board with them. So now these new summoning types are actually going to affect the way that the entire game is played with Pendulums and Lynx. I think going forward, it would have been some weirdness of stacking the cards and making little houses and stuff. Like, all right, if your house is taller than your opponent's, you win the match.
Yeah, I think, like, part of me is like, we don't need a new summoning type. I don't think that we do. But I think that if we had to have one, it could only happen if there's another anime. Like, there needs to be an anime to exist alongside it.
True.
Because if it's not, then I just feel like it'll only serve... Like, there won't even be, like, a cool protagonist using an ace monster for you to kind of aspire to be like. It'll just be like, oh, here, Konami's just adding more complication for the sake of adding complication.
I mean, like, and I still can't think of what I could do with Yu-Gi-Oh cards that has not been done.
Yeah, it feels we've like
stacked them.
Everything's happened. Stuff's banished face down now. We have plenty of things that shuffle back into the deck to summon. It's, you know, so I don't know.
Maybe we start turning the cards up. They make upside down cards where you just turn them. They like transform and you just turn the card around and now it's another more powerful card. I don't know. I'm trying my
best. There's a world where it exists. I mean, I know people kind of wanted like the link arrows on the spell and trap cards, like where the spell card will have like arrows that point up so that could open up your links. You know, that's just like a thing people have talked about.
I mean, I was still waiting for Pendulums to have different scales on different sides. That never happened.
And there's also the dark synchro thing, if anybody remembers that. Do you remember?
Now we have Urs Arctic, where you subtract the
yeah,
the stars.
It's kind of Urs Arctic, like pre-Urs Arctic kind of vibes.
Because I remember they printed all of the dark synchros years ago, but as regular synchros, but with like kind of specific summoning requirements. I think they needed like dark tuners and stuff.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think that like we gotta have a new anime for much of anything to really stick. But the attribute thing isn't enticing to me.
I think it'll probably be easy enough to implement. It would change a lot with how we play the game.
True.
Because can you imagine, you know, your entire board gets broken purely off of attributes?
I wonder what happens for monsters that are, like, treated as multiple. Because there'd have to be, like, a little ruling. You know, like, Dark Samora is, like, dark and wind. Or, like, Elemental Mistress Doriato gets to be, like, everything or whatever.
Which could be dangerous because it could have double the strengths but also double the weaknesses.
Yeah. Like, I think that'd be fun. It'd be probably easier to do in a video game because, like, you know, you can kind of automate.
Yeah.
Because asking players to keep up with it might be a bit of a mess. But it shouldn't be hard. They're just sticking with the original six attributes plus divine. Like, fire beats water, water beats... kind of got to, like, reason that out a little bit.
Well, water beats fire, right?
Or, so yeah, sorry. Yeah, water beats fire.
Fire can beat...
But then, like, what does fire actually beat?
Wind. Like, because fire takes in oxygen. It's a stretch, all
right? So then wind has to beat earth, because that
wind
was like a Duelist
earth,
Kingdom
it can
thing.
It can erode rocks.
Or that, and like you're just, it's like a flying creature, maybe.
Okay.
Like that's kind of how it was, like Joey versus Mai, like he couldn't.
Fair, okay, so wind beats earth.
But then what does
earth can
beat? I feel like earth would beat fire too, but ooh. Then it's like water also beats it. So does earth beat water? Because what sense does that make?
Earth can beat, ooh.
Mm. And then dark and light kind of are
thunder,
their own little
thing.
It's
like, wait a minute, thunder's not an attribute, it's a type.
I guess what you really find is that really the types would probably have to be the ones that are more, that have more of like a chart than the attributes.
You might have to do the thing, because like I've seen it in other games where you have your like your basic attributes, like fire, wind, water, earth, and then light and dark have their own relationship with each other and none of the others. And then there's divine, which is separate from all of it.
Well, cool concept. Thank God I don't work at Konami and I have to figure it out.
It's their job to figure it out.
Yeah, figure it out, Konami. It's you guys'
problem. Make it happen.
Okay, here's the next question. It's kind of vaguely related. Are Pendulum's biggest issue that they don't look like Yu-Gi-Oh cards, or is it the Pendulum summoning mechanic? If they had made them look the same as they are, but they were just a card that could be played as a monster or played as a spell, would they be hated like they are? Or is the visual design of them too much for players to overlook? Good question.
Yeah.
This is from Basic Nerd. Shout out Basic Nerd.
It's actually a great look at what made Pendulums fail and how they almost killed Yu-Gi-Oh. It was a twofold problem. It's kind of all of the above, really. The look of a Pendulum card, it immediately set people on edge. Pendulums don't look like traditional Yu-Gi-Oh cards. And yeah, you can say the same thing about Xyz and Synchros, but Pendulums were adding new boxes, new symbols.
Yeah,
they're dual colored. It was a lot all at once.
I think that if Pendulums had been like regular monsters that could just be played as spells and traps, I think that you are right that they would have probably been better received. The only issue is that mechanically, they had to add distinctions of like, this has this effect when it's here and this one when it's here. Like, you could put that all in the same text box, but the writing, the font would be so dense. Like,
yeah, the worst part about Pendulums, because of the nature of them, they had to change the card design so that you could actually figure out what you were looking at.
I mean, you got to find somewhere to something to do with those arrows. Like, how do you communicate the arrows?
Which I guess they didn't really need to have the arrows. They could have just had the numbers on the sides and called it a day.
Well, do you know what I think also they could have done? Maybe the monster's level is just its arrow. Mm. Like, so if you think about it, right? Like, I'm just entertaining this question to the fullest.
Right.
There are Pendulum monsters. They have kind of the same mechanics and effects, but it's just all in one text box. So the card gets to look like a card you're familiar right. with. And then, because, you know, you were saying, like, it would have been cool if Pendulums had different numbers on each scale or whatever, but they never did that. Well, in that case, why can't Astrograph Sorcerer's scale is just 7 because its level is 7? It's level 7, that's its scale 2. And then also, you know, whatever other Sorcerer Pendulum Magician thing is, like, level 4, so its scale is 4. Well, like, maybe that would have been okay. I don't know the issue
you run into, and it might be based off of how we've played Pendulums in the past, so it might not be the best opinion. But I think it'll be difficult to design a strategy like that where the monster's level is its scale, because that it's essentially saying you cannot summon me this if you have me in the scale.
Maybe that's a good thing. Maybe it's like that's like a balancing
thing. But I think it gets confusing then.
But yeah, that's true. Because it's funny, like, as Pendulums went on, like, early on, there was like a big focus on kind of making sure that those scale numbers were kind of precisely designed. Like, you'd see a lot of archetypes where they're like, the scales are like 3 and 5. So it can maybe only make level 4s with your Pendulum summon. Which
typically that's what you want to summon with your 4s.
And there was more value in the idea of a Pendulum monster having a very, very low scale or a very high scale. And sometimes if they really wanted to balance a Pendulum, they would make it scale 4.
Yeah, and then you can't summon.
So now 4s. It's like, yeah, you probably just can't summon much with this. But as time went on, they're all 1 and 8.
Or higher, or lower.
Or lower.
There's zeros, yeah, there's 10s. Yeah,
it's like 0 and 12s and stuff, right. Or whatever. And so it's kind of like, you can almost sense that Konami even just got tired of...
They gave up.
They gave up on that restriction. It's just like, listen, all this new Supreme King stuff or all this new whatever, it's all just going to be like zeros and eights and summon whatever you want, have fun.
Like, pay them summon an Egyptian god for all I care, because I believe there is a scale 13.
Yeah, so it's kind of a... Pendulums might have just been doomed from the start. I think it's just the complication... Probably was always going to sort of scare people away.
I think Pendulums would have done better if they could have existed in a bottle, their own format, where if you're into it, you can play it, and if you're not into it, you could opt out. But the fact that we made Pendulums and offered it to the entire community, like, hey, you can play these, and then there are formats where it's like, hey, you have to play these, or at least learn how to play against them, because that's just the format we're in. And I think if people could have ignored Pendulums would have been more successful, because the people who liked them would have embraced them. The people who didn't could have just not. But it was forced on everybody.
Yeah, and also people hate kind of the feeling of it being kind of forced onto them. So Lynx suffered from that especially. Yeah. So.
And then Lynx did, they did some damage too.
It's funny because even with Lynx, you look into the future of their design and you start to see they just kind of moved away from the whole arrows and co-linking stuff for the most part. It's just broken-ass Link monster. Right, like Opalus's arrows don't matter, you know, like all these a lot of new link, like access code does not, arrows aren't, that's not a thing.
Nobody's,
you know,
trying to link, nobody's trying to co-link.
IP and SP, same thing, like late stage Link monsters are just good monsters.
But I think it's because Yu-Gi-Oh was so focused on returning players, they realized that you can't choose from what era your returning player comes from. All you can do is try to have a game that's ready for them to play. And if I'm coming back and the last time I played was in the Synchro era, and now the cards are blue with arrows pointing left and right, I'm like, I don't know what this is. And you're telling me like I have to use these? What do you mean I can't just summon three Synchro monsters for my extra deck because I need a Link monster? Oh,
yeah, it's rough. Where's the next question? Does the ban list exist because of players' intuitiveness or what the cards actually say and do? Or a mixture of both? This one's from Dre. This is another really good question.
Wait, hit me with that again.
Basically, he's asking, does the ban list exist because players are intuitive and do things that exploit the cards and cause them to get banned?
Okay.
Or does the ban list exist just because this card objectively does this thing that is powerful?
Got it. Okay.
You know, it's not always a clear-cut question because we know that the truth is somewhere in the middle, but what do we have to say about that?
I think the answer changed over time.
100% agreed.
I think at first, Yu-Gi-Oh! The people running Yu-Gi-Oh! Did not think we needed a ban list. But they also didn't know what players would cook up. In the early days of Yu-Gi-Oh!, player will and ingenuity made us need a ban list. We found some degenerate nonsense we could do. We could do loops. We could do locks. Plays.
People just found out that some cards are better than others, drastically so. And it's funny because early ban lists, there were kind of two main things you would see with it. The first is locks, FTK, Exodia thing, FTK thing, kind of weird, Yara lock, whatever. And then the second big thing was just deck building variety, where it's okay, when you release cards let's say Graceful Charity and Pot of Greed, everyone's just going to run three. Same with kind of Heavy Storm, Dark Hole, Raigeki. It's why wouldn't you just have three Raigekis?
Just run three of those cards and commit as little to the board as possible.
Yeah, board destruction cards. Just don't commit anything. It's going to get Raigekied. So, that was kind of how it was early on. I don't think that for the most part, Konami was designing cards knowing that they would be banned. I think that they had the intention of certain cards being strong and being kind of rare. But yeah, when you're in a tournament setting, strong, rare, doesn't matter. People are going to get the cards. They're going to use them.
I truly think that they were not planning for optimized decks when the initial cards were created. I think it was assumed that players would obey the booster pack system where you might have one or two very powerful cards. You might have a Raigeki in your deck, but you only have the one. You might have a Graceful Charity, but you might only have the one because it's rare. It's got a low pull rate. Yeah. I don't think they were planning for people to shout out all the money, get their three ofs, and call it a day.
Yeah, so as time goes on, you certainly start to see that the player ingenuity sort of thing, it still exists even today. People will find kind of weird stuff that they can do, but it feels far more manufactured in the sense that Konami knew Malice and Riser are going to be good. Let's not fool ourselves. Same with Tyr, Kashtira, Snake Eye. I don't think that those are accidents in any sense.
They would be crazy to not design cards with the past metagames in mind and player preferences. Because what players will tell you what they like and what they don't like, and if you're not taking that into account when you're designing cards, then you're not doing a very good job. Downside is that means certain cards have to be made with an expiration date on them.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because we've touched on this a lot recently, I feel like, in these just conversations. It's just like the idea that like a lot of cards really are like, you know, understood that they will be hit.
Yep.
Like it's understood that in some form the Fiendsmith engine is going to be hit. It's not a question of if, it's a question of like when. Not to say that there's zero chance that it escapes unscathed, like, but the thing is, if it escapes unscathed, then that will still mean that it got power crept for the most part.
Yeah, there's a like, bigger boogeyman.
Like, that's kind of the adventure token engine, right? Like, yep. That was in everything, and it kind of just got crept.
Oh, I mean, it did get hit a couple times. No bans, but it got...
Actually, no, that was only in the OCG.
Oh, did Water Enchantress not get limited for us? I don't think
they ever hit her.
Oh.
Not in the TCG, like Master Duels hit it a little bit, but like... Yeah, I don't think she ever got hit. Someone can correct me if that's wrong. No, the OCG did, but I don't think that... I think in the TCG, we just kind of like moved past it at some point.
At three, the whole time. That's crazy.
Yeah. But it kind of goes to show, like, I think that the design is such that, like, something better will come out. And the thing that's better was, like, made in a Konami lab.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you know. So, anyway, to get back to the question... I think the ban list first existed because players kind of broke things and found things. I think now it very much is a vehicle to just kind of hit the card because it does a thing that everybody knows is not fair, and also Konami knew was unfair when they printed it. But like, you know.
But, you know, and it's not, doesn't necessarily mean Konami's a bad guy.
Yeah, that's true.
Broken cards are what intrigue the Yu-Gi-Oh player. I mean, you can argue card game players in general, we want powerful, borderline busted cards. It makes us excited. It makes us want to play. Now, do we like it when those cards resolve against us? No.
Yeah, there is this whole thing I've always had about, like, strong cards are good because they move the needle. Like, the conversation ultimately ends up being about them, whether you like the card, whether you hate the card, whether, you know, this and that. You have an opinion on it. Mm-hmm. Like, at the end of the day, we ignore sets that aren't good. Like, when new archetypes get leaked and revealed, we want them to... We kind of immediately assess them, right?
Yeah, it's not about, oh, this archetype looks fun. It's like, well, how strong is it?
Yeah, there's like... That's kind of a barometer of success. Like, there will be people who are interested in it because it looks neat or whatever, but, like, generally, it's like, okay, how good's this shit, right? Is it good? Like, that's a big deal. If it's good, then we kind of... We are more interested and we talk about it more, like... The yummy archetype, right, in Justice Hunters, they're cute and stuff, but, like, once people kind of realize this shit slaps and does a bunch of stuff that it can, you know, like, it can make fields, it's now apparently, like, kind of invading the OCG and doing really well, now we care a lot.
I don't.
And, yeah.
I don't like cute things.
So, it's, yeah, that's the gist. Anything else to add to that? I don't know if you
have that just about covers it, I think. Strong cards are bad, but they're also pretty good.
Yeah, they're bad and they're good. Okay, last one is just a fun little two-part question for Alec. Oh. As a Yu-Gi-Oh! Lifer, but Digimon and Gundam newbie, so he knows that you like these things and he wants your insights. First, I have a Yu-Gi-Oh! GX remaster and the new Digimon anime circled on my calendar to watch.
Fire.
Oh, by the way, the Yu-Gi-Oh! GX remaster starts next month.
I don't know
if you knew that. It's not going to be really very exciting because it's just one of those shitty
I'm excited.
It's an HD upscale.
I'm plugged in.
Okay. You're not even going to get the season that you didn't...
Is it dubbed at least?
No.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah. No, at least currently that's not the... Anyway. Yeah, I've watched the Digimon Try series. Is the Digimon reboot series worth watching? Second question... Any Netflix Gundam anime that are must-watches for a newbie? I randomly watched a season of Gundam Build Fighters on YouTube, and I actually liked that concept. We will take these one by one.
All right. Okay, so question number one, that was...
This person says, I've watched the Digimon Try series. Is the Digimon Reboot series worth watching?
Luckily, Paul can weigh in on this one, too, and I think we can both agree when we say...
Digimon 2020 Reboot?
The more you like the original Adventure series... The less you should want to watch the reboot. It does not actually add much.
I don't think it does justice to the characters. I feel like The characters just feel kind of drained of a lot of the personality. Yeah.
You will see some new Digimon. So if you're in, you know, if you really like seeing new Digimon, if you want to see the adventure, like partner Digimon turning some Digivolve into new forms, that happens too. But if you like the characters, like the Tamers, Ty and them.
Yeah, I don't think it does a great job of that. I also didn't even really find it to be very, like, well animated or very. The storytelling and, like, pacing was kind of, I don't know. I didn't love it. I wouldn't say, like, watch the first few episodes, see what you think. But it wasn't for me.
Well, that's not fair. The first few episodes are the best part of it.
Yeah, actually, that's fair, yeah.
So maybe just watch the first few and nothing else.
Yeah, I think the first few episodes kind of bait and switch.
Because they do kind of a retelling of Our War Game with Diaboromon. And that was actually pretty nice.
Yeah. The second question for him or her is any Netflix Gundam anime there must watches for a newbie?
So I don't remember what Gundam series are all on Netflix, but you did mention the Build Fighter series, and I actually love that series.
Yeah, they said they watched a season of Gundam Build Fighters on YouTube and liked the concept.
Because there's also a Gundam Build Fighters Try, the sequel, and there's even Gundam Build Divers, and they're all fine. I really did enjoy them. As far if you like the Gundam Build series, then my recommendation, if they even have it, which I just don't know what's all on Netflix, I would try The Witch from Mercury. Because yeah, the other Gundam series, they're a lot heavier and they're more focused on a dramatic storyline. The Witch from Mercury has a dramatic storyline, but it's not so war orphan focused.
Yeah.
And because if you like the Build Fighter series, then throwing you to Gundam Wing or, like, you know, the original Mobile Suit Gundam would definitely not be the right call.
Yeah, I can say, I mean, I'm not nearly as big a Gundam fan. I've only watched a couple of the more recent ones, like IBO and Witch from Mercury, and I guess I'll be watching G-Quux. And I've watched, like, one of the Build Fighter ones.
Watch Build Divers?
Yeah, one of those where, like, the kids would, like, go to the school and, like, they build the little things that go in the...
I forgot.
I remember that. Yeah, I watched that. Oh, yeah, wow. I don't remember too much about it, but I remember watching it. I also would vouch for Witch from Mercury. It's pretty good.
So. Yeah, like, if Witch from Mercury is on Netflix, which I really don't know, that's my recommendation. Otherwise, Netflix does have a few Gundam movies. Oh, wait, never mind. Those are much heavier than Build Fighters.
I actually hate how, like, consuming anime these days can be so predicated on, like, these different platforms. Like,
yeah, this you just is never on, know where things
this
are.
This is on Hulu, this is on Crunchyroll, this is on HIDIVE. It's like, oh, my God, can it just be, like, everywhere? But then, like, if you want to have access to it all and you're not a pirate, then, you know, you just have to be subscribed to a billion things.
I'll put you guys on game if you don't know. One fun thing about the Gundam series and franchise is the Gundam Info YouTube channel periodically will just host the entire series or season of any given Gundam anime at any given time. I think right now, MS Team on Gundam Info? I want to say it might be 08 MS Team. But yeah, check out Gundam Info on YouTube. They just have Gundam series and movies on there from time to time. And you can just watch
it. It's a good way to, like, kind of get a taste test as well. If there's one that you're interested in.
In multiple languages, so.
Anyway, that's going to be it for the Pod of Greed for the week. Hopefully you guys had a good time. Hopefully you also enjoy the rest of your Thursday.
Oh, yeah. It is Thursday.
Next week is going to be an exciting one because it will be our 100th episode. It's also going to be the Nintendo Switch reveal.
That's the episode where Paul's going to give me my 100 chain.
Yeah.
It's going to be gold with platinum. And
speaking diamonds. Of, by the way, there's a Nintendo Direct that's, like, going to be... It's like on Thursday morning.
He's ignoring the chain that he's going to give me. But you guys hold him to it.
Okay. If we get 200 channel members, then we can buy it. Afford it. No. There's a Nintendo Direct that's this week, but it's supposed to be like some Switch games. But next week's the big one that shows more information on the Switch 2. So we'll be
I'm more interested in the games than the Switch 2.
Yeah. I mean, we might see a bit of both. Who knows?
All right, then.
Cool. We will see you guys next week.
Pass turn.